Terry, about 5 years ago, you revealed to your fan base that you have epilepsy. And I don't know, for interviews, do most of your interviews start with now, "So, Terry, how's your health?"
You know, sometimes, yes. And that's okay. Every time I have the opportunity to talk about, you know, not so much my health, but epilepsy and raise awareness about it, I feel I have potential to help a child or help someone that's perhaps silently struggling with it because there is so much stigma attached to epilepsy. So I don't mind talking about it. But as far as health goes, I feel fantastic.
Good, good. Well, I understand it was one of the reasons why you revisited the album, The Art of Removing Wallpaper, that came out with a 2012 edition here, because that was a time when you were going through some health troubles and your voice wasn't in the greatest shape, as you've mm-hmm. said before. How much, when you redid this album, did you change?
I would say there was a few lyrics that always bothered me. And I have somewhat of a hoarse voice, but during that time, the medications that I was taking, it was the wrong combination, and it was extremely drying on what they call the vocal folds, and I could never get enough moisture in there. And we would do one gig, and I would be fine, but the next gig, it was almost sounding like laryngitis. So anything that was like that, I went ahead and fixed. If there was a line in there that I just felt wasn't exactly precise, then I went in there and fixed it. As a whole, it needed to be remastered. We decided that we wanted to bring it more current with the levels that recordings are now. And then we remixed a few things, took some reverb off. We decided to do together collectively some things that we felt were sonically perhaps better. And then I would say it was 30% changes on all the songs and then 100% change as far as overall. It sounds the way I wanted it to sound now.
Yeah, production-wise, Lloyd, when you go back and you listen to something like that and you are trying to update it, what are you hearing when you go back then and then when you go and you re-record some of these things?
Right. Yeah, I was never really happy with the mastering. Back when we put that out, we were kind of under a time crunch. So we got the original master back, and we thought, okay, this sounds good. But then the more we live with it, we wish that we had just had the time to really hone in and detail it like we wanted to. So, you know, we had the chance to redo a few things for the remaster, and so we did that. The only thing that we changed structurally, there's a song, the very last song is a song called "Hey Now," and if you compare those two, we changed that one mm-hmm. a lot. We went in the original arrangement. Frankly, that was a song that Terry wrote extremely fast. We needed an extra song. We just felt like the record was too short, and just to give the listener more music time, we put that on there just for fun, kind of a fun thing, but. After living with it for years, the arrangement really grated on our nerves.
And the lyrics.
I mean, it was kind of one of those things. We thought it was good at the time, but it sounded a little too hee-haw for Terry's style. So we went back and totally kind of rearranged it digitally. I mean, we didn't re-record it, but she changed some lyrics. We took out a lot of vocal answers that sounded a little like John Wayne and the Green Berets, you know, which is like we did, that was that it sounded like fun. It sounded like a good idea at the time, but it just didn't wear well. So we went back and really streamlined it and made it a little more concise, and we're happier with it.
I noticed that there are some lyrics that are different on this release here, and on one song, "Enjoy the Ride," they're more direct.
Yeah, mm-hmm.
I think
yep.
in one spot, because you say the original lines were, "I've overstayed my welcome, and they split me in two. Mm-hmm. I shouldn't have to be broken to fit into their point of view." And you changed "they" to "her."
Yeah.
Why did you do that?
That is paying attention. That's some close listening right there.
You know, structurally, it just bothered me that it was going the "they" was bothering me because it wasn't about a group of people. It was about one specific individual, and that individual could be me or it could be someone else. So it just seemed like a group thought there was against, you know, you don't get me, that's okay, I can understand. I'm a scratch-off dreamer with a lottery ticket in my hand. See, there's no you don't get me, so it should be a her, not a group. Mm-hmm. So that always bothered me. You know, it just makes more sense with the first line.
I almost wondered if you were talking about someone in particular.
I was. So, yeah, I was in particular. Sometimes I just feel like people show up to an event perhaps just to rain on the parade, and that's what that was. It was just about someone showing up just to be in a bad state of mind and bringing the overall joy of a situation a couple of pegs lower. You know, mm-hmm. And then the first line is about wanting to get booked at this festival. And I got word back, you know, which sometimes people are blatantly honest, you know, I don't get you. So it's like, you don't get me. That's okay. I can understand, you know, music. It's not everyone's cup of tea. That's what makes it fun. People have different tastes. So sometimes I write in groups, and that song was a bunch of different ideas put into one song, which made it really hard to write.
Mm-hmm. Lloyd, you've been working with Terry for some 15 years now, I guess. Yeah. And you've said that you've become an even better guitar player through your collaboration with Terry. How so?
I have. Well because, you know, I had always played acoustic guitar and electric guitar in studio situations, you know, sessions back when I was living in Lubbock. I worked in the studio there for 23 years, and I recorded lots of records, lots of genres. So I learned, you know, several different styles just from getting thrown in the fire to do it. But I'd never really played that much guitar live. You know, I had played pedal steel live a lot with Joe Ely and Maine's Brothers, and you know, a few other people, Jerry Jeff and Robert Earl. So pedal steel was really my main live instrument. But when I started playing with Terry, acoustic guitar and dobro, we were more of an acoustic-driven band. And I realized when I started playing live, hey, wait a minute, you know, this is way different in the studio. In the studio, you can kind of make something up on the spot, play it, everybody gives a thumbs up, and then you don't have to play it again. It's like you just sort of forget it. Doing something live, man, you have to bring it right then. You got to bring something good to the table right then, in the moment. And so it made me become a lot better player. I had to, frankly, to keep up with the live scene. And you know, and her music is not easy. It sounds deceivingly simple, but it's not. It's pretty demanding. So
what's the hard thing?
You know, just. Well, for one thing, we do a lot of gigs as a duo. So just to sound good and full, and I mean, we've had people come up to us after shows and say, man, y'all sound like three or four people up here. You know, it was because we really work on our inversions, on our chords, you know, using capos and playing. She'll play one position, I'll play another, just to broaden the sound out. And, you know, when you get two guitar players playing this exact same chord positions, it starts sounding pretty one-dimensional. So we try to spread it out and make it sound bigger. And so, you know, that takes some work to really find some kind of sound that works. And so it made me woodshed. It made me know that, you know, I couldn't go back and hit the rewind button. You know, it's you got to do it right then. Yeah.
A few years ago, I remember you had announced through email on a website that you were working on a jazz album,
mm-hmm.
and it didn't really, you know, come out. Although I think some of the tunes from that, or at least some of mm-hmm. those ideas, may have found their way to Cry Till You Laugh, because there's some very jazzy things mm-hmm. on that album. Sometimes it's a really, really jazzy number. And so what happened with that project? Is that something that's still in the back of your head? I know you're always thinking mm-hmm. of ideas and kind of things to work on like that.
Yeah, well, my thought is that Terry's voice is just designed to be a jazz singer. I mean, you know, she can sing, you know, Nina Simone and Ella Fitzgerald. I mean, that style, she just nails. I mean, her voice is geared for that. So I still think that's on the horizon. You know, it's just I know that the record you're talking about was going to be this one. It was mm-hmm. going to be "Cry Till You Laugh." You know, but we get in there, and you know, it's like at that point, she had written some songs that she wanted to get down, and like that was kind of what was in her heart right then. Mm-hmm. And so the whole doing a jazz concept record just kind of got put on the back burner. Although we did do two or three really great jazz things on this record. I think that there's still one on the horizon at some point.
I hope so. I mean, you know, we've been working in the studio and on thinking, you know, planning the next record. And I do hope perhaps some jazz type songs will end up on what we're working on now. I really had wanted to do it. I ended up buying a 12 string and getting really inspired by tuning it into an alternate tuning. And then I wrote Hand Me Down Blues. And then Einstein's Brain happened after that. And then the songs just started to fall into place, and it just didn't feel right to do the jazz record. And now I kind of wish we would have withheld the three jazz songs for a jazz record. But I felt like it was important to get a record out, and I have a really hard time sticking to one genre. So, you know, I decided, well, let's do what we've always done and make it a mix.
Well, I think of the people who are your fans and the people that will follow you around mm-hmm. the different genres that you go to on your albums. You know, I mean, it seems that it all does fit together, even though there's a couple of different styles on right. some of your releases.
Yeah. It's still Terry, you know.
Yeah.
Any way you look at it. Yeah.
But
yeah.
I also think it's the way you produce. You produce about the song, and I don't think any other producer would be able to do it. It's just it ended up being a blessing for me, because I just don't think any other producer would be able to make it sound cohesive, throw a bunch of styles at someone and really make it sound like it should sound like an album, like a cohesive album, no matter what genre you're doing. So I feel really lucky.
Well, tell me about the tune that we heard in the studio today. Speaking of new projects and new songs, Ain't It a Shame. Mm-hmm. So when did that come about, and how much new material are you working on right now?
Right now I'm working on a lot. Like, I have a lot of lyrics. I'm just really diving in and setting aside. And I really don't think – I don't want to do a singer-songwriter record now. I want to revisit – jazz and kind of smoky blues, and that song is called Ain't It a Shame. It was written by Elder Roma Wilson, and I first heard it by this harmonica player named Scott Byram out of the San Marcos area, and I heard it on his record, and I really liked the lyrics, and we worked it up, a different arrangement of it.
It was written back in the 30s. I mean, it's an old song.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I like it because it's different. I feel like it's time to do a record that is all one genre, that being kind of a bluesy style with harmonica, and then I'm going to save my lyrics and really work on the song so that when I do a singer-songwriter record, I really feel like they're going to take time. Some of the ideas are going to take time.
Well, one of the places where your ideas also come to fruition in terms of writing is not just on record, but also on paper or virtual paper sometimes through the essays that you write for your newsletter that you send mm-hmm. out, and getting published in Lone Star Music Magazine, and through the books now, Cry Do You Laugh, The Part That Ain't Art. And I guess how much of your life now, speaking of that subtitle, how much of your life is a part that ain't art, I guess?
Still quite a bit. It's just worked out that way, you know, and still quite a bit, perhaps more than I wish, but I'm self-employed and I can't complain about it. It's just by doing a lot of the work myself, and then I have a wonderful girl, Veronica, that comes in and helps, and another girl named JC, she'll come in and help, and then I delegate the tasks to them, and they do a great job and get it done, and I would rather pay them than I would a company that I might not know about. You know, just publicity, radio promotion, all of that gets really expensive really quick. And if I'm going to spend that type of money, it has to really, really make sense. It has to, you know, I'm not going to ever tour the way I used to tour, and to spend that money on a publicist, you need, you've got to be able to hit the road and make those dollars make sense. So that means it's going to be a lot of office hours. When we do this new record, I have to really think about it, about the office hours. I don't consider it self-promotion. I just consider it, people like this station have been so supportive of me. They deserve CDs in a timely manner, making sure that you're taken care of and other stations like you, doing the nuts and bolts of keeping this little cottage blessing going in the right direction. And it'll be ours. It'll definitely be the part that ain't art.
Well, you have a wonderful project, and congratulations now on the Own Your Own Universe designation as a 501c3 nonprofit agency. Mm-hmm. I guess that happened just this past wintertime.
It did. It happened in March, and I was checking my mailbox every single day, and I didn't think it was ever going to come, and then it came. And then once it came, I had like a freak out. At first, I was happy, and then I was freaking out, like, oh, what am I doing?
I've got to do it.
It's a reality now, and it's really going to be exciting. One day it'll be an art center in Hays County area, and it'll be an art center, and I'm really excited about it. We did our first fundraiser, and I have a board of directors, and it's just going to be a wonderful thing to work in all aspects of art. And I just feel like every person that can learn to play guitar or write a song, it just makes this world a better place.
What do you hope to do at the center? I mean, like, who do you hope to bring in, I guess, in order to benefit from this foundation?
All types of people. You know, I over and over again, I hear women that are in their late 40s, 50s. I've always wanted to play guitar, they say to me. And I want to say, I'm going to teach you. There's where you come, and I'll teach you how to play guitar. And by the way, why don't you bring your daughter? Mm-hmm. So mother and daughter, or two best friends, or Lloyd and myself have worked with two autistic women out of the Houston area, taking those two autistic children and bringing them to a workshop, and then watching them thrive in the company of three other 15-year-olds that did not have autism. But seeing the barriers come down and seeing the pens come out and songs get down on that paper and hearing their voices sing in unison, that's what's going to be at the center. Where you're not seen for your limitations. Music is what this cohesive force that binds us, and that's what the Art Center is about. You know, getting a bunch of people that might have cancer or be on the other side of cancer, getting them to all come together and let's play some music. Let's learn an instrument.
And also, she's going to try to gear it to kids who are less fortunate.
Underprivileged.
Who can't afford music lessons, that can't afford to learn to play piano or guitar or learn to do pottery or painting. You know, you'll try to work programs that these kids can come to whether they can afford it or not.
San Marcos is 58% poverty, and it was 2 years ago I was asked if I would help fundraise for choir uniforms. Mm-hmm. I so much wanted to be able to do that, and at the time we were on the road and I couldn't. But now, once I have that art center, I can fundraise for choir uniforms. I'm a 501c3. It makes the transaction very clear, and there's your choir uniforms. That shouldn't be an issue, choir uniforms. You know, I don't want to be the person that wants to change things, and rather than whine about it, just get the choir uniforms. So the Art Center it sounds like a huge concept, but it's not going to be huge. It's going to be small, but I feel like we're going to do some really big things.
You incorporating this message, you know, in part into you. I mean, it's great that you have shows and touring shows where you can spread news about this to people in person. Are these is it something that you'll be talking about with the audience?
A little bit as I get going. I feel like some people feel like I already have the land and I'm already perhaps have a building, which I have to fundraise quite a bit to get the land or perhaps get a building donated. But I'm definitely making people aware of it and getting the mission statement together. Lloyd and myself toured all over the world. We went everywhere. We have played everything that I always wanted to play. I can't really think of anything that we haven't done. I miss the road. I do miss meeting new people, people that have changed my life, some of the best people I've met on the road. But I have to look at logistics. My time on this earth is going to be best served at the Art Center and tour when it makes sense. I'm never going to be able to tour like I was. I do have epilepsy. I will always have epilepsy, and I will always have to treat it. And the best way for me to treat it is lots of rest and nutrition, which is very hard to get on the road. So by focusing my energy on the OYLU and playing perhaps more regional and speaking about the OYLU, people can see firsthand what I'm doing. Whereas if I'm in Pennsylvania speaking about it, it would be harder for someone there to perhaps grasp the concept. I'm going to have to really work on spreading the word regionally. And then when it makes sense, if we go do the Philadelphia Folk Festival again, then of course I would speak about it there. Yeah. But definitely have something to prove. So when I do speak about it in Philly, they can say, well, gosh, look what these people have accomplished.
Yeah, look what she's doing.
Yeah, yeah. It has to make sense.
Well, you're playing a gig here in San Antonio on June 22nd at Sam's Burger Joint. And longtime residents of San Antonio may remember the venue as Billy Blues, when it was many, many years ago. And they used to host open mics there. And I suppose you were there at the open mics, of course, as I understand it. And, you know, are there places like Sam's Burger Joint / used to be Billy Blues, or places in that you've played in the past and you're now coming back and playing again and again and again, where you continue to play these same rooms, literally? And what do you think about when you walk on stage and remember those times when you were just starting out going on to that very same stage?
I feel lucky. Even though Lloyd gets to hear me complain now and then about the part that ain't art, a lot of my peers that did have big management and did have a tour bus, they're not able to do music anymore because their overhead was so high. I feel very lucky that I met Lloyd in 97 and we began to work together, and we kept the overhead low so that I could work for myself and remain self-employed doing something I honestly love. I honestly feel like I can make a difference when I step on that stage at Sam's. I know of a woman that has cancer. She sees so many of our shows. She's been struggling with cancer for many, many years. And even if she might be, when I see her in the audience, I just think, wow, I'm making a difference in her life. So when I play at Sam's, I feel lucky. I feel lucky to have the opportunity to play. I feel lucky to get booked. And I feel lucky to play a show. I feel lucky to play with the people I play with. And that's how it feels.
Lastly, time and time again, I hear about folks who are fans of groups and fans of bands and local performers, and they rave about them. But it seems to me that people who love y'all's music, they talk about how much your music means to them personally and about how it really just affects them. And how do you feel about your relationship with your fans and your friends, I guess, your music friends?
I feel lucky about it. I feel like if I write something, and Lloyd is a great writer as well, I like the way he keeps things simple and direct, and he is a great editor, and then his production, I feel lucky that people want to listen to it and give it a chance. And if I can write a song like Monopoly and have it mean, about the deregulation of radio and have it mean something to someone that is in radio, I really feel that I've done my job. I feel very lucky, and I feel obligated. I feel obligated to my fan base. That's why I haven't released a record since 2010, because I just didn't, after putting out that book, I just didn't have the inner fire in me to create anything new for a while. And I feel that I owe them something I can put my name on 100% and really believe in it. And I feel just very grateful to have their support. They're the reason why I have a house. They're the reason why I have three mutts. I can afford one of which is the world's most expensive mutt ever. But
yeah,
they,
I can tell you that she I witnessed it. I mean, after gigs, she'll stay. And if someone comes up and wants to, you know, seriously talk to her about something, I've seen her stay there and talk till the last person leaves. And when people do write her letters, whether it's via mail, snail mail, or email, you know, talking about how much her music is meant to them, whether it's, you know, gosh, if it's their family life, or if it's just, you know, if they just had a great time at a show, she always, always answers them personally. And I've just never seen anyone do that. You know, take the time to do personal letters. You know, I guess every artist has like a form letter they'll send out, but she absolutely takes the time to give a personal response. And I think that's why so many people embrace her and really, really dig into her music. And I mean, she just writes, you know, she writes songs that hit people between the eyes. I've seen it firsthand.
Good. Well, Terry Hendricks, Lloyd Maines, thanks for coming back, and let's not make it too terribly long again before the next one, okay?
Good to see you.
Thank you so much.
Good to be here.
It's really been a joy and an honor to be here.
Thank you.